Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, I bring you good news. I bring the listeners good news. It has been pouring, thanks to a listener. I have photos that were sent to me up on Mount Lemmon, where they had a very, very strong thunderstorm, which then turned into hail. And
wow.
there's a lot of hail, a lot of white stuff right now on the ground up at Summerhaven. I don't know how long it'll last, but...
hail to Mount Lemmon.
So that's the very latest. There is a ton of moisture out there, Tom. So
yeah, driving in, I was looking at the sky, you know, and I could see puffy whites here and there. And then you look over to the Catalinas and up on Mount Lemmon, there was that storm just
that
perched
storm.
Right on top.
Yep, so we are going to get rain today. That's a pretty safe prediction for the two. Tom's got his double fingers, both hands with fingers crossed for rain. As long as it's not destructive, that's my hope. Well, here we are, midweek edition. It is Wednesday, the second day of July, 2025. And for my Canadian friends, sorry, I didn't mention yesterday. It was Canada Day yesterday, and I didn't mention that at the top of the show. I love Canada. Been up there a ton of times. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio, part of the Bustos Media Center, located in central Tucson. Five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. July 1st, we hit the 14 and a half year mark for our radio program. That puts me at 37 and a half years in local media, quite a bit longer in general media concerned, like a long time. We have all of our live listening at buckmastershow.com. The podcasts are up at buckmastershow.com, so we've got all the programs archived going back to the first week of 2011 when we launched the radio show. Our telephone interviews, and we'll do one of those at 12:30. That live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we bring in Tucson City Councilman Democrat Kevin Dahl, who is standing for re-election for his second four-year term on the council. Kevin is very much conservation and environmental centric. He retired.
Thank you.
There you go. He retired in 2022. He had 14 years being the Arizona representative of the National Conservation Association, which worked to protect the Grand Canyon, Saguaro Petrified National Park, and other national parks. And he's probably kind of happy he's not having that job right now, trying to, with all the cuts to the national parks, which doesn't make sense.
Doesn't make sense.
Good there's to see economic, you, by the way. Hello.
Thank you. Such an economic driver, and getting rid of park rangers, who are the most respected people in the country.
Yeah.
This doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and then, of course, you worked as the executive director at Native Seeds Search, which is still going strong.
Still going strong, yeah.
And then executive director of the Tucson Audubon Society, now known as the National Birding?
The Tucson Bird Alliance.
Tucson Bird Alliance. Okay. Oh, and I always mention in your intro, because these books are still available, Wild Plants of the Sonoran Desert. That one you can pick up at the Arizona Sonora Desert Museum, probably online too.
Yep.
Native Harvest, Authentic Southwestern Gardening, published by the Western Parks Association. Do you cook as well, Kevin? Do you?
My wife is a wonderful cook, and very occasionally I cook.
Okay.
Yeah.
Kind of like I'm starting to do more cooking and actually enjoying it. All right. You were the lone no vote on this wash ordinance. What is that about, Kevin Dahl?
Well, we were looking at making it illegal to camp in washes. There was also an ordinance on parks. And by the way, my colleague, council member Elaine Santa Cruz, would have voted no, but she was out sick during that regular session of mayor and council. How it came about, Bill, is that there was a court case that allowed municipalities to legally outlaw activities like that before it, the court record, it was a constitutional right. now it no longer is.
Are we talking about that's the one that went to the Supreme Court?
Yes.
And out of the Medford, Oregon area, Grants Pass, Oregon. Okay.
Yeah, that's the court case. And at the same time, the legislature passed an unusual bill that allows property owners to apply for a reduction in property tax if they feel that the municipality, the city or county, is not enforcing laws and that they're impacted by people who are unsheltered or other people. Our attorney recommended that we strengthen our ordinances. For instance, we had an ordinance on the book that it would be illegal to panhandle on the medians.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been struck. So someone could apply for that property tax reduction because we weren't enforcing anti-panhandling laws, but constitutionally we can't do that. So we modified that, and I don't believe any activity on a median is safe. People are there with their dogs, and it's very distracting. So I supported that earlier. But for washes and the parks, I thought I had heard from people who are working with homeless and unsheltered who were very upset with the criminalization of just being homeless. Washes are not a great place to live. We have laws in place. You can't do criminal activities in washes. You can't camp next to a business, a residence, or within a certain number of feet from a school. During monsoon season, we regularly and just recently cleared out everybody we can from washes because it's frankly dangerous.
Of course.
So I thought this was an extra step that wasn't needed, and I wanted to make that point. It's not a for or against camping in washes. And by the way, I brought more details, the nuance to my vote in a guest editorial that the Daily Star published. If people want more information about my thinking about this,
Will people be arrested now if they are seen camping in a wash?
The police have no extra resources to go around arresting people. We have a protocol when there are homeless people, unsheltered people, encampments, drug activity happening that concerns people, you can report it to 311 or online, and we have a protocol. Typically, we have social workers in our community safety, health, and wellness group be the first ones to contact people and bring services and try to help people. When there's illegal activity, police are involved, and when we have to clear, oftentimes police are involved. And then we have people from environmental services come and clean up afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a procedure. We don't have enough resources either for social workers or for police. We don't have enough shelter beds, and we don't have enough affordable housing. But we're continuing to work on all of those.
Mm-hmm. Could there be like a tent city, a designated area in the city where people could camp?
Yeah, the city has been reluctant to go that way.
Some cities have done that, right?
Yes, and I think the tide has turned. All of my colleagues are talking about it. And when we find the right location, we are likely to set up a structured campground. Think of like a KOA commercial campground where you check in and check out, a limited number of time days you can stay there, but also wrapped with services.
Mm-hmm.
When at shelters, we bring in also services from our nonprofit partners and other agencies and try to keep people moving along towards housing, towards having a place to live that's sheltered. So I think we will do that.
Well, did you get a lot of blowback on this?
I got a lot of support.
Because you mentioned it. I'm looking at your why I voted against the WASH ordinance, and you did acknowledge some people were not happy with you.
I knew ahead of time that some people would be unhappy, and I got a few emails, but I was surprised by the number of support I got, especially from people who are actively working to tell people who are living on the street and get them someplace where they can get their life back on track.
Mm-hmm. So still to come, looking at the possibility of tent, a legal place for homeless people to pitch a tent.
Yeah, I think we've needed it for quite a while. At first, when we were doing our homeless protocol, it seemed like whack-a-mole. People would move from this alley to that wash to this park and then back to their original location. Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't solve this problem with a whack-a-mole solution. We need to help people find what they need, overcome whatever challenges they're facing, and it can be mental, it can be drugs, it can be economic. so that they can come back into society and have a place to live and have a job and be reconciled with their family, whatever it takes to get them off the streets.
All right, still to come with City Councilman Kevin Dahl, the big topic of the summer, Project Blue. Tony Davis doing some great reporting on this subject. Today's piece in the Star that Tony has, Project Blue envisions now up to 3 data center complexes in the Tucson area. I guess 2 would be within the city, according to Tony's reporting, and 1 in Marana. So we'll talk some more about Project Blue and the way Kevin Dahl is leaning very consequential, there you go, try to say that, vote will be coming up on the City Council in August. Let's take a break. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. Be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Going to be a rainy day here in Tucson. Already Mount Lemmon had a very good rain shower, turning in and a little bit of turning into hail, which I hope doesn't happen at the Buckmaster Bungalow with all those newly planted beautiful flowers that we have. Hail can really do a number on them. Anyway, the more immediate concern right now is something called Project Blue, which is really so much attention on this. Kevin Dahl is here, and Kevin comes in the first Wednesday of each month to our program. And folks that don't know, Kevin is the Ward 3 Tucson City Councilman, Democrat. So Project Blue envisions, according to Tony Davis, great reporter, up to 3 data centers in Tucson. 2 of them would be in the city of Tucson, and 1 would be apparently in Marana. Let me just get your thoughts on this Project Blue, Kevin Dull.
Well, when I first heard about it, I had a lot of questions, and the optics weren't very good because the proposal came on county land, and it went to the County Board of Supervisors first, and they supported selling it without having full information, which surprised me. It's coming to City Council because the property will need to be annexed for the data center to get the water that it needs. And what I've learned is data centers take a lot of water and a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So I met with the group that's developing it, Beale Infrastructure, and these are the people who will build it, and then they'll lease it out to some company that will do AI, cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. or something.
We don't even know what they'll do, right?
They won't tell us.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So and I understand that economic development, we sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, all the time. I didn't sign it, but it was signed for the city by staff. Is a way for companies to not let out trade secrets while they're thinking about where they're going to place things and not reveal to their competitors or to other communities that are thinking of another place for them to build. In any case, I thought this was done very poorly, not probably by design. I was able to meet with them Friday, and which is the bulk of Tony Davis's article, because mm-hmm. I had invited Ed Hendel, who serves as my appointment on the Water Commission, mm-hmm. City Water Commission, mm-hmm. and also owns an AI company, knows mm-hmm. a lot about this stuff. So he was able to ask the right questions and understand the answers mm-hmm. even more than mm-hmm. I was. I am very concerned. Right now I'm a hard no. I don't think data centers are the way to go in our community. They take a whole lot of water and even much more energy. And those are two issues that we have in our community. Mm-hmm. And we don't know how much energy yet.
This is the first time you've really said publicly
yeah.
that you're a hard no.
Yeah, I wanted questions answered. And I haven't gotten all my questions answered, but I know enough now to say this is not where we should be putting our resources. And mm-hmm. water is a resource controlled by the city of Tucson. And energy is something of concern to everybody who buys energy from Tucson Electric Power.
Some are saying this is the most consequential vote that the city council will have taken in years. Would you agree with that?
Maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole, okay. but I think it's a very important one, because if we go this route where we start agreeing that data centers, which take a tremendous amount of water to cool, keep the computers cool so that they don't stop operating, we're going a direction that will preclude so many other opportunities for us to use our water.
So the water would be, according to Tony in his piece today, they would have to use until they could do this pipeline, which could take a while, right, for
right.
the reclaimed water. They'd use groundwater, drinking water.
They would use potable water from
that's,
the, from
that's
the city
the problem,
of Tucson.
Right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it is. I like that they have tried to figure out a way to do it with net zero water, they're calling positive water, by investing in treating a well that's poisoned by mm-hmm. industrial activity and mm-hmm. making that water usable, and using reclaimed water, and also investing in other ways to do water conservation. I think any new big development, whether it's an industry or a big residential community, needs to think about how they do maximum water conservation and how they help pay for to conserve water to balance out what they'll be using. Mm-hmm. But even so, that means a lot of our water supply will be going to this one industry.
Mm-hmm.
And my concern is we don't even know who it is. Is it going to be a cryptocurrency company owned by President Trump? Is it going to be an Elon Musk project? Mm. Is it going to be AI? And I have a lot of questions about our speeding mm-hmm. into AI taking over everything that we do. Not that I'm a Luddite, but we should be much more deliberate about that, and we should recognize the consequences. I'm concerned that when Facebook makes me do AI and I haven't asked for it, that's using a lot more energy than water than just normally using Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And then there were the optics about the 14% Tucson water rate increase and 14% TEP water.
Yeah, TEP.
Or TEP power increase.
TEP
Even though those wouldn't be necessarily related in any way to these projects, the optics may, you know, people that don't follow these things, you know, they see that. What's going on?
Well, the developers told me, well, they're going to be impacted by that rate increase just like everybody else, except we don't know. We haven't seen the energy agreement between TEP and them, and I really want to see that and scrutinize that. Whether the current rate increase is impacted by that, we do know that there'll be a large load of energy, and TEP is not producing fossil fuel-free energy yet. In fact, they're not going as fast as I would like. So it brings a burden. It has a climate change impact. It has probably an impact to ratepayers. And those are questions that I had at the start. They haven't been adequately answered. And as I think about it, looking at how data centers have impacted other communities, our community is not the place for it.
Okay. Kevin Dahl announcing here he is a hard no on the Project Blue complexes. You mentioned TEP. There was going to be on the ballot in November something concerning TEP. That will not be happening. There is so much confusion around this. Could you simply explain it?
I don't know if we have enough time, but I'll try.
Could you try to bottom line this?
Yes. We need to renew our franchise agreement with TEP, and that's simply an agreement for them to use to put their infrastructure on our city land and easements. We've also been trying to negotiate some contracts that are part of that to help us go towards climate change goals. At the same time, we did an energy sourcing study, which looked at a number of different ways that we can get renewable energy into Tucson, one of which is the city of Tucson buying out TEP for the city customers. That public power is something that's very attractive to some people. I originally thought that that wouldn't be possible, that we wouldn't be able to raise the money. But the study shows that it is feasible. So I think that's something that we need to explore. But please don't conflate the two. We need to do a franchise agreement. We need to do those climate change projects with TEP. We also need to go down the road and explore whether public power makes sense for the city of Tucson.
Mm-hmm. So that franchise agreement, it's not a hard deadline on that, really.
No, well, the current agreement will run out.
Yes.
And that's happened elsewhere. And what happens is we let them continue to do their work and we don't get the franchise fees. So it would hurt Tucson a little bit. We still have another year, and the franchise agreement is likely to be on the ballot next year, maybe in March, May, August, or even as late as November.
So there will be a kind of a housekeeping item. I don't consider the three council seats housekeeping items, but I'm talking about the future plan, for the city of Tucson.
The Tucson general plan.
Thank you, general plan.
Yeah,
is that also something that is
that's on the November
required
ballot? Yes, the state required. We have a general plan. We're required to every 10 years update it. We've gone through 3-year process, maybe 2.5 years of getting public engagement and refining it to make sure that it reflects their current values. And I think they've done city planning department has done a very good job of engaging the public, coming up with a plan that's acceptable to almost all the stakeholders, but it has to go to a public vote. It'll be on the November ballot.
I'm just reading a couple of comments coming in from folks about Project Blue. A lot of confusion, but a lot of interest in this, right?
Yeah.
We're going to have to see how that is all going to evolve. But what about going back to Project Blue and the folks that are very much supportive of it are talking about all the jobs it would bring? And I think you need to address that here in the remaining minute or so.
Thank you. I certainly will. Mm-hmm. Constructing the plant will involve a lot of jobs, high-paying, probably union jobs, for 2 years. Then it's a skeleton crew that will operate the data center. It's 180 people, average 64,000 a year. I like the idea of the construction jobs. We need more union jobs, but I think we need to make choices about what should be constructed. We wouldn't be supporting constructing a concentration camp that might make the same number of jobs.
Right.
We want to construct much more sustainable industries and industries and commercial operations that employ more people going forward. We don't want a construction boom and then it's over. We want jobs that will last, and so that people who are doing those jobs can really become a member of our community or who already come from our community.
And there are relatively few jobs that are within the centers after they're built. Is that my understanding?
Phase one, 180 jobs.
Okay.
Yeah, I talked to the developers about putting solar on the parking lot, and their response was, it's going to be a very small parking lot.
Small parking. All right. Where can people find out more about that newsletter, which so thorough that your office puts out every Friday?
Thank you. You can sign up for it if you go to the City of Tucson Ward 3 website. There's a place in there where you can put in your email. And I hope you'll like it. And if you don't, you can turn it off.
Yeah.
If you want to find out about things in Ward 3 in the city, it's a great newsletter.
Okay. And a couple of quick items about the 4th of July. I have so many listeners who very much are against selling fireworks within the city limits, but it is a state
law. It's a state law.
You guys are pretty much...
I hate fireworks. I have a dog.
Yeah. Your hands are tied. But what your hands are not tied on... Is it possible that next 4th of July we will see more just a drone show and not fireworks?
That's a big yes. I and some of my colleagues are working towards that. Drones, maybe a light show, something else.
But
it's
right
just
now,
as patriotic and fun, but it's not a fire danger and loud and
But you want to see that direction.
I absolutely do.
All right, Kevin Dahl, thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, and happy Independence Day to you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, Professor Albrecht Clausen will be with us on the live line. I think he's in Middlebury, Vermont, where he's teaching in a very prestigious school, Middlebury, and we'll have him on the live line right after we take our mid-show break.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. All the plants are waiting for the rain over at Green Things. The rain has already arrived up on Mount Lemmon. They had a very strong thunderstorm I have the pictures to prove it. Someone sent me a lovely picture of the very wet Summer Haven. And the next picture I was sent was a very, not extremely white, but you could see where the hail had really accumulated. So that thunderstorm moved through late this morning, and there's a ton of moisture that's coming up from Mexico. So there's a very good chance we will get rain here in southern Arizona, up in at least in the Tucson Valley. All right, Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. Their website is greenthingsaz.com. Their sister business is zocalovillage.com. And they have a fantastic selection, Arizona's largest selection of pottery. 13 vibrant acres filled with an incredible variety of plants, cacti, fountains, and outdoor furniture. I know the owners very well, family owned and operated since 1970. Jan and Jack, the owners, very hands-on, and their staff of people there will not only point you in the right direction for your particular need, they'll walk you over to where you can find your particular green thing. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we will be utilizing the live line for our segments number 3 and 4. Albrecht Clausen is a renowned scholar of medieval history, someone that we believe fits the T for the true meaning of a Renaissance man. He is a University of Arizona Distinguished Professor of German Studies. He's published, at last count anyway, from my bio intro from last month, it was 132 books and 810 articles dealing with comparative issues, gender topics, environmental concerns, and cultural historical themes. He's won many honors, including the Grand Knight Commander of the Most Noble Order of the Three Lions in recognition of outstanding services to German studies. He is the editor in chief of the international online journal Humanities. His most recent book is a translation of a memoir by a German Jewish nurse who miraculously survived 3 years in a concentration camp from 1942 to 1945. In 2022, Professor Clausen spent a semester in Cairo, Egypt, as a Fulbright scholar. He joins us now from Middlebury, Vermont, where he's teaching at the very prestigious University Middlebury. How are you, Professor?
Oh, thank you very much, Bill. I'm very happy to be on the program. Thank you so much. It's a very pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
So how many years now have you been there, going back to do this work at Middlebury? And perhaps you could explain to our listeners what you are doing.
Yeah. It's my fifth year right now. This is a very special place. I think it's the only place in the world where most of the many of the major world languages are being taught in a 7-week course, let's say Hebrew, Korean, Japanese, Chinese, Russian, but then also German. And actually, German was the very first language being offered here 110 years ago. And the students, all levels, from very first semester to the PhD level, have to swear an oath not to speak any word of English for 7 weeks.
How many weeks? How many weeks?
7 weeks, Bill.
7 weeks?
So breakfast, lunch, dinner, in the evening, whatever. Only the target language, in our case, German. So this is an amazing experience, and I feel very, very honored to be here. This is really, you know, you need to be a really advanced teacher to be able to carry out those duties. And it's a great pleasure, actually.
Do you see the students do this? I mean, over the 7 weeks, do you see just a tremendous improvement?
Oh, it's a miracle. I mean, I don't teach the very first semester, but this time I teach on the third level in literature, and the progress students make is just amazing. Just imagine you were, let's say, just dumped into France or Germany, and no one would speak a word of English with you. But very quickly, you pick up something, particularly because you have teachers who really help you to make your way through that new language. So I've seen many, many different miracles. That's really the goal we all have, that our students, they come from all over the world, really become new citizens of a global world. And you need languages in order to achieve that goal.
Is German one of the more difficult languages to learn, Professor?
Well, this is a little bit in the eye of the beholder, but it's not the easiest, but it's not the hardest either. After all, German and English have lots of common roots. A lot of German words are the same in English. But of course, you have to learn your fair share of grammar, lexicon, morphology, phonology, and all these other aspects. But our students are really amazing, and they soak up the new words and the material they learn in really just an amazingly quick time. It's really it's like an island you're suddenly stranded on, and you have to really to cope. And they do. They really do. It's really an amazing experience.
What is the feeling like back there? We had Professor Ted Downing on our program recently. I know you know the professor. He's been involved with the University of Arizona Faculty Senate. He's in the leadership in a leadership role there, and he's been at the University of Arizona for I think 55 years. And he said he said the situation with higher education is like nothing he has ever seen before, a system that is under full frontal attack.
Exactly. There are many different prongs the government is pursuing against all of us, and I would say against higher education at large. No discipline is exempted. Actually, the science fields are even worse off than we are in the humanities. But I think higher education at large is under attack. But I can give you a concrete example. We got really specific instructions on what to do in case ICE people or agents come and try to penetrate into our classrooms. We are so scared. This is a very scary scenario. I think everyone in the entire United States should be really worried and concerned about that abuse of power, which ultimately will hurt us all. Because if research is no longer being done, if advanced education is no longer being done, and if we kind of try to stop foreign students to come to the United States, we are cutting off our own legs. Because those are, you know, the most brilliant people in the world, and we are lucky if they come to us and want to study with us. They will become the future scholars or researchers, and our government seems to say we don't want them. So there's something really badly wrong in every concern. So we both talked about it last time. I'm very worried about the parallels between Hitler, Germany, 1933, and the United States, 2025. They're really scary parallels. I can tell you, I'm a little island right now. It seems to be all just fine. We are sort of kind of protected here.
I wanted to, this is the first I've heard about worries about ICE coming into University of Arizona classrooms. Is there some kind of a protocol now that you all are adopting, or what's going on with that?
Yeah. But first of all, keep in mind that the Border Patrol, for example, in Tucson, entered almost violently, a private home in southeastern Tucson just a few days ago.
Yes.
So there is hot pursuit of someone, but it was completely illegal. They had no warrant and nothing. So we all worry about it. We have a certain protocol what to do and basically stand our ground. But what are you going to do if a SWAT team of people suddenly stand at your classroom and trying to apprehend someone they suspect of being an illegal? This is a most scary scenario where we are really afraid that no legal protections is any longer valid. Of course, the university is trying to give us support as much as they can, but what do you do in such a situation? So stay calm and stand your ground, but it is a scary situation.
Well, you're in a very liberal area there at Middlebury, so you said you're kind of in an island where people are very much value the university system. After all, at Middlebury, that's the economic driver of that community, isn't it?
Yeah, but, you know, the University of Arizona or ASU or NAU, they are the intellectual drivers of our own state.
Yes.
So I think everyone in the entire United States, and it's only the United States, is under attack. So I think it's a very strange movement to consider the universities as hotbeds of terrorism or whatever they might imagine. Whereas it is a driver, the university is a driver for the future. You know, new research and new understanding, knowledge, philosophy, the arts, biology, you name it. And it's just incredible. You probably have heard also how many major research grants have been cut at the University of Arizona. I think the number is something like 67 major research grants. It's just unforgiving and unconscionable what is happening there.
Yeah, and each one of those research grants could lead to really bettering our society. That's what's very troubling, isn't it, Professor?
Absolutely. Think about water, for example. I'm not in the field of hydrology, but I heard the interview before, and we are very much concerned about water, and we should be. So the hydrologists need to come up with new ideas and understand the conditions much better. If that is cut, for example, then we're cutting off our own legs. This is suicidal. It's a suicidal mission, what our government, I mean, the federal government is doing. I think our state government is still supporting our university, but something is fundamentally wrong in our entire thinking. So we
All
are
right.
deeply concerned.
Professor, can you stick with us another segment? We'll take a break and then we'll come back with you on the live line. Thank you. All right, Professor Albrecht Claassen is with us from Middlebury University, where he is teaching a really immersive language program where for 7 weeks his students cannot speak anything but German. He's speaking, teaching German. And you talk about total immersion into a language. And that's what's going on with Professor Claassen right now back in Middlebury, Vermont. We'll take a break right here and then back with segment number 4 on the Buckmaster Show.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past 2 decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Nice day over in Silver City. Silver City is reporting 75 degrees, so mid-70s. They're going to get some rain, like we will, most likely upper 70s for their highs. The weekend looking ahead, upper 80s, so it's going to be cooler over there. It always is in the summertime because their elevation is around 5 to 7,000 feet, depending on where you are in Silver City. And there is a lot to do over there. The Gila National Wilderness, one of America's first national wilderness, is at the doorstep of Silver City. And then just up north is the Cliff Dwellings National Monument, which really makes a nice outing. It's only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Pretty much you hit I-10, take a left at Lordsburg, and then up the mountain to Silver City, where pretty much can guarantee you're going to have a great experience. Our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property and Management. Professor Albrecht Clausen is with us on the live line. He's having a great experience in Middlebury, Vermont, at Middlebury College or University. Is it, Professor, is it called Middlebury College?
College, yes.
Yeah, college.
But it's the summer school.
Yeah,
the Can you imagine the German summer school was founded 110 years ago.
What?
So there's a long tradition of teaching German.
Mm. This is a question I have never asked you before in our many conversations. Why did you originally pick the field of medieval history? Was there something in your past or that as a young person that intrigued you to go into that area?
Yeah, actually, the more I work in my field and change and adapt, the more I realize what my original goal and dreams had been, because this is a field where I can and must incorporate many different disciplines in order to understand a text. So, for example, I need to know a lot about art history, medicine as it was practiced then, architecture, something about music theory, astronomy, numerology, you name it. So many different aspects, and of course, history. So I really enjoy doing this, focusing increasingly on cultural history. And these components, whether this is old age, childhood, miracles, that's a new book forthcoming, or peace, toleration, all kinds of different aspects. And we thereby gain new understandings of fundamental human concerns, ideals, values, and culture. And then we can kind of draw from that for our own exploration. So really, I like to see myself as a comparatist or as an interdisciplinary scholar, using primarily literary texts. But from there, I can go then to many different other subject matters.
Are you working still then on the book Miracles of the Middle Ages?
Yeah, thank you. That is about to be done. I still have to do the index once the final corrections have been applied. and then it can go into press. So hopefully sometime in fall, and we both can take a look at this.
Well, can you give us a little preview? What would be some of the miracles of the Middle Ages that you would like to share with our listeners might find interesting? Go ahead.
Yeah. So instead of just simply describing miracles, we look at the way how people in the past viewed miracles, how they interacted with that, and thereby we study really the approach to understanding and knowledge. In other words, like medical miracles. We have lots of images that show us that miracles happen at a certain time, at least people believed in those, because let's say a child falls into a fountain or into a deep well and is then rescued after a prayer to the Virgin Mary. Mm. What happened there? How can we deal with that in intellectual, scientific, scholarly terms? So it is really a very serious effort, also from a multicultural perspective. We have Arabic texts, we have Hebrew texts, and Christian texts, of course, to understand how people thought about those aspects. So it's not emotional, it's not religious as such. It's a very serious scholarly enterprise to understand something that has been of greatest significance for millions of people throughout times.
What about the relics of the Middle Ages? These were very popular. Part of the cross that Christ was crucified on. There were all sorts of these relics, weren't they, all over communities throughout Europe?
Yeah. We also look at satires when, you know, texts that describe how fools use some kind of pig bones and say, oh, this was the bone of Saint so-and-so. And people are so naive, of course, and they like to believe anything as long as it sounds spiritual in a way. Yeah, it's also important to understand that people's foolishness in the past. We are not that far away, Bill. Sorry, I have to say that. We are not that far away. You know, we have lots of examples of similar experiences. But again, I don't want to dismiss them. I mean, there are indeed many strange things when prayer has helped. Prayers to relics, for example. Very, very curious. And medical doctors don't know really how to understand those things. So it's an effort to bridge two different disciplines, or three or four different disciplines, namely religious studies, medicine, literature, and maybe art history, and bringing all that together so we can focus on what was really going on in people's minds and what strategies were used to convince people that this or that might have happened.
All right, Professor Albrecht Claassen, we'll try to get you on the schedule in August. Are you going to be there through the whole month of July?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well,
we'll be back sort of. We'll try end of August.
We'll try to work something out and get you back in studio. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Have a good afternoon.
You too. Professor Albrecht Claassen with us on the live line from Middlebury, Vermont, a beautiful area of New England. All right, that's going to wrap it up. We'll see what happens with all this moisture that's in the air. Can't wait to get outside and see the big cloud buildups, which I am sure are happening. Hope everybody has a great afternoon. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with Tom Fairbanks, engineering and producing the show, and we wish everybody well.